on the Charter for Budget Responsibility. I wish to inform the House that I have not selected the amendment on the paper, and it is therefore for the Minister to move. I call the Chancellor of the Exchequer, Mr. George Osborne.
Mr. Speaker, I do beg to move that the Charter for Budget Responsibility, which was laid before this House last month, be approved. It sets out the next steps we take to turn Britain around and ensure that the mistakes of the past are not repeated. And people will remember the fiscal crisis facing this country 5 years ago. A deficit that stood at over 10% of our national income, a government borrowing £1 in every four it spent, a Treasury whose departing Chief Secretary left a note saying simply there's no money left, a country described by international bond investors as sitting on the financial equivalent of a bed of nitroglycerine, and a British economy whose ability to pay its way was questioned in the world. And that was the appalling inheritance left to us by the last Labour government. I give way.
I'm very grateful to Chancellor Exchequer for giving way. He said an economy last able to pay its way. When did the UK last pay its way? When was it last not in deficit?
Well, the last time it was not in deficit was when people followed Tory spending plans and there was a surplus at the end of the 1990s and 2000. And that is indeed what we advocate again. But let me make this point, that at that moment of maximum danger, 5 years ago, as much of the rest of Europe became engulfed in a sovereign debt crisis, Britain faced a choice. Did we have the resolve to cut our spending, cut our deficit, and set a course for economic stability, or did our country go on borrowing and spending our way to economic ruin? I will give way to my honourable friend.
But surely we can't relax for a moment. When we say we're cutting the deficit by half, that's good, but it gives the impression the problem is solved. We're still borrowing £90 billion a year. The debt is still at about 1.7 trillion. Therefore, we cannot relax for a moment. We cannot allow there to be any sort of government that lets the anchor off, and therefore we have to say no to a Labour government.
Well, my honourable friend is absolutely right. Having brought the deficit down, we have to complete the job, we have to run a surplus, we have to get our national debt down, and that is what this debate today is about. And we remember the people 5 years ago, people in this House, people on that bench over there, who urged on us the ruinous course of more borrowing and more spending. The very same people who had presided over the borrowing and the spending that had put Britain into such a perilous position. And I'll give away in a moment, but I want people to remember that the country knew better than to listen to them again, and they supported this government as we took the difficult decisions required to cut our spending, reduce our borrowing, and get our country living within its means. And then, when the problems in the Eurozone became acute and the currency union on our doorstep was threatened with collapse, we heard again, as we hear now, the siren voices luring us onto the economic rocks. Stop the cuts, they said, spend more, borrow more, adopt a plan B. But Britain stayed the course. We did not spend more, we didn't spend less, we worked through our plan. And the result in the verdict of the IMF, no other major economy has achieved such a substantial and consistent reduction in their structural deficit over recent years. I give way to the Shadow Chancellor.
The Chancellor told this House that if Britain was to lose its AAA credit rating, then that would be a disaster for Britain. Could he remind the House, when did Britain lose its AAA credit rating? Was he the Chancellor at the time? And when are we going to get it back?
Well, we retain our AAA credit rating with some credit rating agencies. And I can tell you one thing for sure, the only way we will get back our AAA credit rating is by dealing with our debts, cutting our spending, making sure this country can live within its means. And if anyone thinks the answer to Britain's debt problems is to borrow £170 billion more, which is what the Labour Party is proposing, then I'm afraid they will be leading Britain back into economic ruin. And And we remember what the Shadow Chancellor said was going to happen if we pursued this plan. He said we would choke off growth, there'd be a double dip recession. Britain has grown faster than any other major European economy over the last 4 years. We've grown faster than any major economy in 2014. And the one recession we had was the one big recession of the Great Recession on Labour's watch.
I give way to my old friend.
The chance for giving way. It was, of course, a Labour government led by James Callaghan, which went cap in hand to the IMF. We have had a Blair-Brown government which has left us with a record deficit. Does the Chancellor share my view that doesn't matter what this lot say today, history repeats itself, and when it comes to Labour, you can't trust them with the public finances?
You cannot trust the Labour Party with people's money. Every Labour government leads this country into bankruptcy. Every Labour government has left office with unemployment higher than when it came to office. That is what Labour does when they get into office. People remember it, and people are not going to trust them with the public finances again. We remember as well what they said were going to happen to jobs. They said 1 million jobs would be lost. Instead, we have 1.7 million more people in work. Unemployment is falling. Youth unemployment down by more than half. Full employment is in sight. They said the public services would be decimated, that crime would rise, but crime has fallen and satisfaction with local government services is up. They said the north of England would suffer the most, just as it had suffered the most in their Great Recession. Now, the fastest growing part of our economy is the north of England, and we're building that northern powerhouse. I, of course, give way to my honourable friend.
Over to my right honourable friend. And I wonder if my right honourable friend, during his busy schedule, was able to notice the comments of the Labour leader of Leeds City Council, who said, I've got to hand it to George Osborne, he's doing more in the north of England than a Labour government ever did.
Well, do you know what? There has been quite a constructive alliance between the civic leaders of some of these Labour civic leaders in the north of England and the Conservatives to bring an elected mayor to Greater Manchester to deliver high speed to, and we have done so in the face of the opposition of the Labour Shadow Chancellor, who has tried to frustrate all these things all along. But thankfully, the Labour civic leaders aren't listening to their front bench anymore. But Mr. Speaker, while the deficit is halved, it is at 5% of our national income too high. Our national debt at 80% of our national income is too high. So now the British people... I give way to the chair of the committee.
There have probably been about half a dozen attempts to try and buttress fiscal policy with rules over the last 30 years, but most of them have collapsed at some point over the business cycle. To get something that works, doesn't the Chancellor agree we need something credible, not just for dealing with the deficit, but also for reducing the stock of debt? And that must mean over the cycle running a surplus.
Well, my old friend is absolutely right. It is not enough to eliminate the deficit. We then have to get our national debt down. It is too high. It leaves us exposed to the next economic shock. We don't want to go into the next economic shock with a debt-to-GDP ratio of 80%. That is precisely why, in good economic times, you need to be running an overall budget surplus. That is the only credible and sustained way to get your national debt down. That is the way you can fix the roof when the sun is shining. I give way to the honourable gentleman.
I'm grateful for the Chancellor giving way. Was it not the case that his boss, the Prime Minister, said that he would balance the books by 2015?
Mr. Speaker, what we have done is we have cut the deficit by a half. We have neither gone faster than we said we were going to go. We have not gone slower than we said we were going to go. We have stuck to our spending plans when people were urging us to take either course. And to get lectures in managing the public finances from the Labour Party is extraordinary. They are in this bizarre situation. I'm going to give way in a moment. But they are in this bizarre situation when they complain that we are borrowing too much, yet they want to borrow even more. Perhaps the Shadow Chancellor could help illuminate this debate and simply confirm that he would borrow more, that a Labour government would borrow more than a Conservative government.
Very chaos.
The Chancellor just said to the House that he has not gone slower on the deficit than he intended in 2010, but the OBR says he's borrowed over £200 billion more than he planned. Could he explain that remark? Because I have to say, I think everybody in the country will be totally baffled by the Chancellor's remark.
We have delivered exactly the spending plans that we set out in 2010. We've not gone faster, we've not gone slower. We're spending this year, indeed, a little bit lower than I predicted in 2010. But I think there's going to be a test. I'll give away in a moment, but there's going to be a test. There's going to be a test in this debate. Does the Labour Party confirm that they would borrow more? They can't complain about our spending cuts. They can't complain about the spending cuts if they don't confirm that they would borrow more. Would the Shadow Chancellor borrow more? Let's have the B word from the Shadow Chancellor.
The Chancellor told the House he has not gone any slower on reducing the deficit than he planned in 2010. That is blatantly untrue. Will the Chancellor clarify or withdraw, Mr Speaker?
Yes.
We have delivered exactly the spending plans I set out, spending plans he opposed. And if he is complaining about those spending plans, if he would like to spend more, then he should be honest with the British people. He should say to the British people, the Labour government would like to borrow more. Why doesn't he have the courage to do that? Why don't they have the courage to tell the truth? The truth is they don't tell the British people the truth, because they know when the British people discover they want to borrow £170 billion more, they're not going to let him near Downing Street again.
I thank the Chancellor for giving way. And does he recall when this government outlined its deficit reduction plan that members opposite, including the Shadow Chancellor, said that we were going too far too fast? Yeah. Too far too fast. Now he criticises we haven't cut the deficit enough. Will he make his mind up?
It is a totally chaotic position from the Labour Party. We're getting on to the farce. We're getting on to the farce of the Labour Party's position today, because they've spent the first 2 weeks of this year complaining that the Conservative Party are cutting too much, that they would not cut as much, and now they're going to troop through the division lobbies with us in support of a charter that requires £30 billion of fiscal consolidation over the next couple of years. Now, to be fair to the SNP, I think they're going to vote against us. The Green Party are going to vote against us. The Labour Party sit there in total silence. They're going to go through the division lobbies with us to support £30 billion of spending. Oh, cheer up. It's what the Labour Party front bench have asked you to do. You're going to lead their party through the division lobbies, because they don't want to admit to the British people that their plans involve spending more money. Now, this is what this charter... I will give way to the Right Honourable Gentleman. I will give way to the Right Honourable Gentleman. Perhaps he, at least, because he has some experience of being in the Treasury, would confirm that Labour, of course, would borrow more. That's their economic policy.
It's more about lending.
I'm grateful for the Chancellor, Madam Deputy Speaker. The point is, he's asking us to be honest, and he's asking us to state where we are today. Can we just put it to the Chancellor? Would he tell us what he said today? A few moments ago, he said that he was not gone any slower, very clearly, we'll all check hands out tomorrow, in reducing the deficit that they've done. He said that word for word. We'll check hands out tomorrow. But, I mean, all we're inviting him to do is to clarify that remark, to tell us it's not correct. Is heard, or Hansard, or go and correct Hansard. Whatever
wrong.
He's going to do, won't he clarify his position? He clearly is totally out of order.
I was, you can check Hansard now if you like. I was very clear about what I said, which is we stuck to our spending plans. We didn't go faster. We didn't go slower. We've reduced the deficit by a half, and we're going to carry on with the job. I will give way to the Shadow Chancellor in a moment. but I want him to understand what he is asking the Labour Party to vote for, because I think the SNP and the Green Party, to their credit, understand that they don't want to agree with our spending cuts. But they need to know. I will give way in a moment to the Shadow Chancellor. But what the plan that we is involved in this charter sets out is, first of all, that we have the OBR continuing to monitor our fiscal rules. This is a major innovation, and of course we take it for granted now, but only 5 years ago we had a Labour Chancellor and the team behind him fiddling the figures and making sure that they were marked against their own rules. And then in this charter we commit to achieve falling national debt by 2016-17 and a surplus on our cyclically adjusted current budget 3 years from now by 2017-18. That requires £30 billion of consolidation. So for the third time, I ask the Shadow Chancellor, will he accept that his plans involve borrowing more? What is wrong with the borrowing word? He used to give whole lectures about why the country should have a fiscal stimulus and borrow more. Why does he just get up and say, yes, Labour would borrow more?
Madam Deputy Speaker, we can accept that the Chancellor may have misspoken. We can check the Hansard record, but just to clarify things for the House, could he confirm that in fact he has reduced the deficit much more slowly than he intended and borrowed £200 billion more than he planned? We don't need to debate what he said. Just confirm it now. Has he reduced the deficit much slower than he planned and borrowed a lot more?
We have halved a record budget deficit to 5% of national income. And he says we should have borrowed more. His plans involve £170 billion of more borrowing. And he finds himself now in this extraordinary position. He is in this extraordinary position where he is asking the Labour Party to vote for a charter that requires £30 billion of more consolidation. So the question is, where does that £30 billion of consolidation come from? Now, to be fair to the Liberal Democrats, they say we should increase taxes to help achieve that £30 billion of consolidation. The Conservatives say it can be achieved by bearing down on spending and on the welfare budget and on tax avoidance. £13 billion savings from the departments, £12 billion from welfare, £5 billion from tax avoidance. That is our clear plan. What you can't do is pretend you support the Charter while claiming the £30 billion doesn't exist at all. That is a totally chaotic position today. Perhaps the Honourable Lady would tell us where the £30 billion, she's going to be voting for this Charter, where she would find the £30 billion of cuts.
Chancellor, for giving way, because I have been trying for a little while to get in, so I'm very grateful that he's given way now. But I can't move on from the position where he said he is cutting the budget at the level, the deficit, the level that he put in, when clearly I remember in 2010, unless my memory is false, that he said he was going to get rid of the deficit over this Parliament. Yeah. And while he's answering that, I wonder if he could tell us whether he intended there to be 3 years of flatlining in our budget, as in our growth as well.
The British economy has grown faster than any major European economy over the last 4 years. It has created 1.7 million new jobs. 750,000 new businesses have been created. The governor of the Bank of England today has described the British economy as being in a sweet spot. And the Labour Party opposed every single difficult decision we took to do that. They opposed every single spending cut, every single welfare change. They go around the country pretending they'd reverse these things. They've made £20 billion of unfunded spending commitments. Every day in this chamber, they get up and ask for more public money to be spent on more things. They get up to complain about the difficult decisions we have taken. It is a totally incredible position from the Labour Party, and it is being exposed today. I give way to my honourable friend.
Right, honourable friend, for giving way. Is it not obvious in this debate you've got the Labour Party who are stuck in the past talking about things which were done years ago, and they're frightened to talk about the future? And did the Chancellor here on the Today programme, Paul Johnson, the IFS, saying borrowing would be higher under a Labour government, debt would be higher in the long run? The IFS know it, the Labour Party ought to admit it.
Absolutely.
Right. Well, my honourable friend is absolutely right. The Institute for Fiscal Studies today confirmed that Labour would borrow £170 billion more. This is their published plan. What's extraordinary is they're totally silent about it. They're not prepared to talk to the British people about what they, I assume, believe to be the right economic policy for the country. I will make a little progress and then give way again. But I want to make sense of this strange journey that the Labour Party have been on fiscal policy over this Parliament. Because after all these twists and turns, I think they have actually managed to end up in exactly the same place as they started. We had originally the Shadow Chancellor in 2010, I think as part of his pitch for the Labour leadership. We thought at the time he was a worse choice than the current leader, but given all that's happened, maybe we were wrong about that. And he said, we shouldn't be cutting spending. He said more spending would grow the economy and the economic growth would eliminate the deficit. That was the position he set out in the Bloomberg speech that he gave, and it was called his so-called Plan B. The problem was that it was rejected by the British public and eventually rejected by the Labour Party. So 2 years ago, the Labour Party changed their approach, and then they committed to the original phrase of iron discipline. The only problem was there was no iron discipline, and they made all those spending commitments. Last autumn, they moved on to another approach, the Basil Fawlty approach, which was not to mention the deficit at all. And I think the House can agree that the Labour leader executed that strategy brilliantly at the Labour Party conference. And so, in December, at the end of last year, they tried something else, and the Shadow Chancellor announced that he would seek to balance the current budget, he would get debt falling, but he wouldn't say when. He said, just as soon as possible. And when pressed on specific dates, he dismissed them. He said, we're not going to sign up to some arbitrary timetable. When challenged specifically to match our plans 1 month ago, on the 11th of December, he said, I'm not going to set a timetable to balance the current budget by 2017. And now here he is, 1 month later, saying he's going to vote in favour of a timetable to balance the current budget by 2017-18. And I thought that was the end of Labour's journey. They were ending up supporting a charter which they had previously rejected, a timetable they had previously refused to sign up to, £30 billion of cuts they had previously denounced. But then this weekend, we were treated to the spectacle on the Andrew Marr show of the Labour leader dismissing the charter altogether, rejecting the £30 billion figure, and returning full circle to where the Labour Party started 4 years ago. And this is what the Labour leader said on Sunday: if we cut our way to getting rid of the deficit, it will not work. That is the latest version of the Labour Party's policy. It is exactly where they were 4 years ago. The Labour leader has gone full circle, gone back to saying the answer to our debts is simply to grow the economy. It is economically illiterate when you have a structural deficit. It is based on the fiddle of trying to upgrade the country's trend growth rate, when that is exactly the mistake that Gordon Brown made, the member for Kirkcaldy, when he was Chancellor and got us into this mess. They have gone from plan B to plan A to no plan at all, and I give way to the Shadow Chancellor.
Chancellor's shouting a lot, Mr. Deputy Speaker. He sounded a bit rattled, I've got to say. Could I get him to clarify where in the Charter for Budget Responsibility before us does it say we're going to balance the current budget in 2017-18? It actually says we'll do it by the end of the third year of the rolling five-year forecast period. A moment ago, he said 2017-2018. Where is it in the document? I can't find it.
Read it. Well, it doesn't augur well for someone who wants to be the Chancellor, but 3 years from now is 2017-18. So, I've been wondering. Really, I think, you know what? He's going to have his chance. Let me wonder. I have to say, I've been wondering what the Shadow Chancellor has been up to all this time, when they've got themselves in such a mess. And I just want to make this observation, and then I will give way. I'll make this observation, and then I'll give way, because it gives a clue into what he's been up to. Because he said to the Independent newspaper a couple of weeks ago, if I'm sitting there at the piano and I start thinking about the deficit, it all goes wrong. on the piano, you have to be totally focused, he said. And with that set of priorities, I think the British people would agree. Let him go on playing the entertainer and I'll go on being the Chancellor of the Exchequer.
Madam Deputy Speaker, it doesn't say 2017-18, and nor does it say in 3 years' time. It said by the end of the third year of the rolling five-year forecast period. When does the rolling five-year forecast period end? In 2017-18, or in 2021, or in 2029-30? It's totally baffling.
The third year of the period is 3 years from now. It's 2017-18. By the way, if he's against specific... use his piano fingers, like one, two, three. But look, the truth is... Let me give way to my friend, and then I know many people want to speak, so I will wind up.
I thank my right honourable friend. Does he draw the conclusion from the Chancellor's recent interventions that he either shadow Chancellor, you will wait a long, he will wait a long time. Does he draw the conclusion from the shadow Chancellor's interventions that he either does not understand the paper in front of him, or he's about to go through the division lobbies for something that he describes as baffling?
Well, I think he is trying to perpetrate a grand deceit on the British public, because I think he has no intention of delivering the £30 billion of cuts. He doesn't want to do that. He wants to spend and borrow more, but he doesn't want to tell the British people the truth about that. And we have today the independent confirmation from the Institute for Fiscal Studies that they would borrow £170 billion more. They are confirming what we know, that the Labour leader and the Shadow Chancellor would do it all over again. Tax and borrow and spend their way into an economic crisis and let the British people pay the price in lost jobs and lost incomes and lost futures. And the Shadow Chancellor does face a choice as he stands up. He can either confirm that by voting for this charter, he's accepting the £30 billion of deficit reduction required to fulfil its objectives, in which case, since he doesn't approve of our spending plans, he is admitting there would be major tax rises under a Labour government, or he rejects the deficit reduction required, in which case he is confirming today that by voting for this charter, it is nothing other than this grand deceit to pretend to the British people they don't want to borrow more, when that is exactly what they plan to do. With the Labour Party, it is a tax bombshell or a borrowing bombshell. The only question is, which will it be? Either way, it leads to economic chaos for this country. Now, I will give way to the Green Party member. We want her and her colleagues in these TV debates, because at least the Green Party is being straight about the fact they want to borrow more money and spend more money. Why doesn't the Labour Party tell the truth about that?
Grateful to the Chancellor for giving way, and I wonder if he would agree with me that with the feeble and inconsistent opposition coming from the Labour front bench, that there is a very good reason for the SNP, for Greens and for Plaid to be seen as the real opposition on this issue, because we are clear and we are consistent. Austerity is not working.
And that's why we want her party in these TV debates. But as I say, Madam Deputy Speaker, what is clear today is that there's only one credible plan to deal with our debts, and that is our long-term economic plan.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It binds us into eliminating the deficit, getting debt falling and running a surplus. It delivers economic security. This charter is part of that plan, and I commend it to the House.
The question is, as on the order paper, Ed Balls.
Madam Deputy Speaker, Mr Speaker, we on this side of the House have pledged to balance the books in the next Parliament. I said a year ago the next Labour government will get the current budget into surplus and national debt falling as soon as possible in the next Parliament. This charter before us today is fully consistent with our position, so on that basis we will support the motion today. We're not going to change our view about what's in Britain's best interests, because another one of the Chancellor's silly failing games, Madam Deputy Speaker.
Yeah.
And if you don't want to take it from me, interesting press release which was issued this morning by not somebody I normally quote in the House, the Taxpayers Alliance. This is what the chief executive of the Taxpayers Alliance said just an hour ago about this debate. He said, "This is a meaningless political gimmick of the most transparent kind, and one that only serves, and one that serves only to remind taxpayers how." I think honourable gentlemen should listen to this. I'm going to read the quote first. "It's a meaningless political gimmick of the most transparent kind, and one that serves only to remind taxpayers how dramatically this Chancellor has missed his own original targets." We're happy to vote to remind people how much the Chancellor has missed his targets, Madam Deputy Speaker.
I've got a very simple question to him. If he thinks it's a gimmick, why is he getting the Labour Party to support it? What's his answer?
I'll explain that in my speech, Madam Deputy Speaker, because it's what we have before us, this so-called trap, isn't a trap at all, and I'm going to explain that. I'm going to discuss the new fiscal charter in detail in a moment. But let's first be clear about the background to the motion today and the new charter before us, because it's not the first fiscal charter we've had before us in this Parliament. It's the second. We had a first fiscal charter which was presented to the House at the beginning of the current Parliament. At the start of the Parliament, the Chancellor laid before the House a charter committing the Coalition to balance the books in this Parliament to get the sickly adjusted current budget back into balance and the national debt falling by the coming financial year 2015-16. As I reminded the House on the day of the autumn statement, the Prime Minister actually went further in 2010. He said he would balance the budget in 2015. But just a few weeks ago, in the autumn statement, the independent forecast from the Office of Budget Responsibility confirmed that this Chancellor is not going to balance the books in 2015 or in 2015-16. In fact, public sector net borrowing in 15-16 is now forecast to be £76 billion, £7.7 billion higher than forecast even as recently as the budget. And in this document, on page 15, the figures show that, in fact, compared to the 2010 plans, this Chancellor in this Parliament is borrowing, staggeringly, over £200 billion more than he planned. The consequence of that is the national debt, compared to the 2010 forecasts, is going to be much higher in 2015-16 than the Chancellor proposed. Back in 2010, he said the national debt in 2015-16 would be 67.2% of GDP. It's now forecast on the latest figures not to be 67.2, but 81.1%, 14 percentage points higher than this Chancellor said back in 2010. And worse than that, the fiscal mandate in 2010, the fiscal mandate said in 15-16 the national debt would be falling. In fact, what the OBR figures show is in 15-16 the national debt is going to be rising again from 80.4% to 81.1% on the deficit. On the current deficit and on the national debt, the Chancellor made promises in 2010 in a clear fiscal charter, and he's broken every one of them, Madam Deputy Speaker. I'll give way.
I'm grateful to my right honourable friend, and was he as surprised as I was that, given all the political bluster coming from the Chancellor of the Exchequer, he didn't once highlight to this House that he used to say that he wanted to balance the overall budget, but now wants to commit to Labour's policy of balancing the current budget, excluding capital investment? And nor did he say that the fiscal mandate had been downgraded from a target to an aim.
I'll come to an analysis of the new charter and why it's changed from the old charter in a moment, but my honourable friend is quite right. The Chancellor didn't explain either that he'd failed to meet his charter in this Parliament or that he's now changed it for the next Parliament in reasons which are surprising, a bit confusing, but we'll come to that. I'll give way to the honourable gentleman.
Would the Shadow Chancellor agree that all these fiscal forecasts are, of course, based on a forecast of spending reductions and growth of tax revenues and the economy? Would he agree with me that in 2010 nobody in either side of the House, including him, including me, realised just how persistent the global problems were going to be, how grave the banking crisis was. So the growth was not achieved that everybody, including him, was then expecting to be seen. Is he saying the reaction to that, because the government stuck to its spending plans but couldn't achieve the growth forecasts, is he saying the Labour government, in the middle of that grave crisis, when it was still persisting, would have cut our spending plans more dramatically in order to hit what he's now praising as our target?
The Honourable Gentleman, as ever, gets to the heart of the issue. Because there's three things which can bring the deficit down. Spending cuts, decisions to raise taxes, and what happens to the underlying growth of the economy and the tax revenues which flow from that. And the Chancellor didn't talk about the third, and for understandable reasons. Now, I will explain the point to the former Chancellor, and then I'll take the intervention in a second. If you go back even as recently as the March budget, the OBR had a forecast for growth and for tax revenues. What's happened between the budget and the autumn statement is that while they actually revised up growth a little bit, they've revised down substantially income tax and national insurance, because what's happened this year is stagnating wages, the cost of living crisis, means that growth has not brought in the revenues the Chancellor wanted. And actually, compared to the March budget, we've lost actually £8.4 billion in this fiscal year, not because of spending cuts not gone ahead with, or tax cuts not delivered, but because the tax revenues have not come in because of growth and stagnant wages. And in the end, the only way to turn round this problem is, yes, to cut spending, and yes, to raise taxes, as the Chancellor has done in this Parliament, but also to get the economy growing in a stronger way, which brings in the tax revenues. If we don't do that, the Chancellor is going to carry on failing year after year, as he has in this Parliament.
Grateful the Honourable Gentleman for giving way. He said he supports the motion, but tonight he's going to walk hand in hand through the lobbies with the Tories on this motion on austerity. So now, can he tell us how the Labour Party differs from the Tory Party?
I'll explain the nature of the fiscal charter and how it works in a moment, and I'm sure the Honourable Gentleman will then see very starkly the difference between our position and the Conservative position. I think you'll find he probably agrees much more with us than the Conservative position. I'll give way one more time.
I thank my honourable friend for giving way, and the point he's made on low pay and tax revenues is absolutely crucial. But is it not also the case that the government has now spent £25 billion more on social security spending than they originally planned since 2010 because of that failure on low pay and a failure to deal with the cost of living crisis?
It is true, Madam Deputy Speaker. If you look at the plans the Chancellor set out for welfare spending in 2010 and compared to the actual outturns, he's overspent in this Parliament by £25 billion. £25 billion more on disability spending and on housing benefit because of what's happened to the economy. So, the Honourable Gentleman, the former Chancellor is right. You've got to deal with those big issues rather than playing silly political games. I will give way in a moment. I'm just going to come to this point in a bit more detail. No, I'm just going to come in a bit more detail about the interesting point about the... Because I think what's clear from the Chancellor's, not just from his speech, but from his whole chancellorship, is that, unlike the former Chancellor, he's never really gripped the actual economics of what happens in our economy. He understands slogans, but he doesn't understand actually how the economy works. And so I'll explain it. We all know the Chancellor flatlined the economy for 2 or 3 years after 2010. But what's happened is, even as the economy has recovered and growth has returned and unemployment has come down, the fact is these are jobs created in low-paid, often insecure work with lower productivity in our economy, many people trapped in part-time employment, zero-hours contracts. The result is the tax revenues have not come in. Let me give the House the Office of Budget Responsibilities figures compared to 2010. Compared to 2010, income tax have come in under his forecasts by a cumulative £68 billion. And national insurance contributions have come in cumulatively less than he planned by £27 billion. In the end, his fiscal failure in this Parliament, which he couldn't deny when we asked him earlier, is because it's not because he's failed to deliver the spending cuts, it's not because he's not raised VAT, it's because the underlying way the economy works, with more people in low-paid work and wages stagnating means the tax revenues have not come in. It's clear from his speech he doesn't understand the economics of this, but that is the truth. I know the former Chancellor understands it, arguably.
To my right honourable friend, isn't it the case as well that many people in work are receiving benefits, and that's a symptom of the low-wage economy? Yeah. Is he as concerned as I am in talking about budget responsibility, that at the Conservative Party conference the Chancellor was promising an unfunded tax cut? Yeah. An unfunded tax cut when he's talking today about consolidation.
It's the reason why the Institute of Fiscal Studies have said of the three main parties, Labour has been the most cautious of the three parties, because we are the only party which has not made unfunded, uncosted commitments to more spending or lower taxes. My honourable gentleman is absolutely right. Let me just carry on and develop... in a second I'll give way. I'm just going to develop this point, which actually the former Chancellor helped me to around the relationship between receipts, growth and the deficit. This is what the OBR said before the autumn statement. They said weaker than expected wage growth so far in 14-15 is depressing PAYE and NICS receipts. And what they then said in the autumn statement is that we expect earnings growth to remain subdued for longer than we did in March. This is the key driver in the lower forecast for PAYE and NICS. The fact is, the reason why he had to revise up borrowing this year is because real wage growth has been revised down this year, next year and the year after, and the OBR forecasts a cumulative loss even compared to the budget in table 4.10 in the document, which rises to $9 billion a year lost revenues simply from income tax and national insurance. The Chancellor doesn't understand this. Unless you bring in the receipts from income tax and NICS, from growth and wage growth, you won't succeed in meeting his targets without colossal, not my words, the Institute for Fiscal Studies, cuts in public spending. He's never really got the economy, and therefore he doesn't understand the point. I'll give way to the former Chancellor again.
Well, the Shadow Chancellor is claiming to have a grip on economic reality, which, with great respect, I don't think he had when he was in office. But going to the point we're getting dangerously near to agreeing upon, when one had the growth forecasts not being met in those dark days 3 or 4 years ago, presumably he's not saying we should have put up income tax any more than he's saying we should have done other than stick to our reducing spending. If until conditions improve, you have to attack the structural problems. Has he not noticed the banking reform, the banking regulation, the skills training, the education reforms, the support for small business, the introduction of research and development and technology? That's the real job. But fiscal responsibility is the essential precondition before any of those things work.
I agree with the honourable. Look, I'm not going to pick over past debates. When he led his party through the lobbies opposing Bank of England independence, well, that was then. And when he advocated Britain joining the single currency in 2003, well, that was then. But we probably agree on other things these days. Let me just take him to the most recent Office for Budget Responsibility forecasts. What they actually show is, if you go back, because he makes a very important point about trend, if you actually go back to the 2010 forecast from the Office of Budget Responsibility, what they forecast in 2010 was that the underlying growth of our economy, trend growth, would this Parliament be in 2014 be 2.1%. And what they show in their most recent numbers, in the most recent document, is they've revised down the underlying trend in 2014 from 2.1% down to 1.7%. So actually, despite the reforms he talks about, we've been going backwards in terms of trend growth and in terms of productivity. On the other hand, if we can raise, through reform, and I'll come to this in a moment, the underlying trend growth of the economy, we can turn this this round. These are not my numbers. These are the OBR numbers. What they show is the following. If we were able to increase the underlying trend growth of the economy by just one percentage point, so it's one percentage point higher, by 2019, which is equivalent to about 0.2%... In a second. By just 0.2% a year. 0.2% a year improvement in the underlying growth of the economy would actually bring in, by the end of the period, £15 billion a year more in tax revenues. So the trend of growth has gone in the wrong direction under this Chancellor, and the key for the next Parliament, as well as spending cuts and tax rises, is to improve the underlying growth of the economy. If we can do that, we can bring in the revenues. If, on the other hand, we fall short in the next Parliament with that Chancellor, in the same way as he has in this Parliament, that would leave, under this Chancellor, to over £110 billion in extra borrowing. If we're going in the wrong direction on growth and wages, the revenues don't come in and the deficit doesn't come down. We've got to improve the underlying growth potential of the economy. We agree on that. I think this Chancellor just doesn't really understand the point. I'll give way.
I'm extremely grateful to the Shadow Chancellor for giving way, but isn't he actually making the Chancellor's case for him? That the first thing to do is to get fiscal stability, and then you get a growing economy, and then tax revenues come through. Tax revenues are always a lagging indicator of economic performance, and they will come through because of what this Chancellor's been doing.
But see, the problem is, the Chancellor said he would make people better off, and they're actually worse off at the end of this Parliament. He said he'd balance the books, and he's not got the deficit down. And the reason is because trend growth and productivity has been weaker than he expected in 2010, which means the tax revenues haven't come in. So, in fact, the opposite is true. What it shows is you need a proper plan for jobs and growth to turn around the underlying growth of the economy. On that, he's totally failed to deliver. But let me just turn, Madam Deputy, in 1 second. Let me just turn to the fiscal mandate, because actually this is where the Chancellor's position becomes kind of farcical, to be honest, Madam Deputy Speaker. In the current fiscal charter says, and I quote, the Treasury's mandate for fiscal policy lapses at the dissolution of this Parliament. I have to say, lapses. It's totally collapsed in this Parliament, Madam Deputy Speaker. It's totally discredited. Even the Taxpayers' Alliance can now see how discredited the Chancellor's forecasts are for this Parliament. But the Chancellor has a bailout clause, because in the old charter it says he has a duty to set out a fiscal mandate, will require the Treasury to set out a revised mandate for fiscal policy as soon as possible in the life of the new Parliament. And this Chancellor, always alive to try to find a new gimmick, decided and has told every Tory commentator going, this is a new trap for Labour. That's what he's going to get. It's not a stunt. It's not a gimmick. It's a trap for Labour. The problem is, as we've seen today, it's not only been an opportunity for us, him and the Taxpayers Alliance to highlight to the country how much he's totally failed in this Parliament on fiscal policy. It's not only a chance to show how extreme his plans are for the next Parliament, and I'll come to that, but he's not even managed to deliver the trap he promised. Let me just explain in a second. Go on, get over.
Didn't want to interrupt the Shadow Chancellor's flow, because I know he's very easily distracted. So if it had not been for the Chancellor's support for the North East by way of city deals, manufacturing and business support, why is it that the North East now has the fastest rate of growth of private sector business in the autumn quarter and the highest rate of growth in the exports? Surely that is evidence that this economy has been turned around by a Chancellor who cares about business and manufacturing.
I'm grateful for the Honourable Gentleman. Look, maybe we could form a consensus on the way forward on devolution for the regions. I'm in favour of that, and so is he. And that's not the only thing we could form a consensus on, because this is what the Honourable Gentleman told Conservative Home just recently. Listen to this. A bit of extra tax on properties over £2 million seems perfectly fair to me. I'm with him all the way. Maybe we should kind of get together on that one as well. Let me just come back to the Chancellor's... shouldn't have let that one through, George. Let me come back to the vote and what the Chancellor said at the time of the budget. This is what he said. He said at the time of the budget, Britain needs to run an absolute surplus in good years. To lock in our country's commitment to the path of deficit reduction, we will seek the support of Parliament in a vote, and I will bring forward a new charter for budget responsibility in the autumn. So the vote was supposed to be on an absolute surplus. That's what the Chancellor was talking about. The Prime Minister, on the 15th of December, on the day the new charter was published, actually attacked Labour for our proposal, which we put forward for 2 or 3 years, to get the current budget into surplus. The thing which was very surprising about that speech, Madam Deputy Speaker, was that the Prime Minister made his speech, did the Q&A, and got off the stage before the Treasury published the new charter. An odd thing, really, when you're talking up the charter. Why wouldn't you put it out in advance? It turned out because the Prime Minister had just finished a speech attacking Labour and our plan to get the current budget into surplus, and then the Treasury published a new fiscal charter committing the government to get the current budget into surplus. Madam Deputy Speaker, no wonder he got off the stage so quickly. The Chancellor promised a vote in the last budget to balance the overall budget. Now they've done a U-turn and they're proposing a vote on the current budget, excluding capital investment, which is the same measure we've been committed to for 3 years. Can he confirm that in the last budget, he promised a vote on an absolute budget surplus, and this charter before us is a vote on the current budget? Is that right? Also, when you study the fine print of this fiscal mandate, it turns out to be even more different from the old one than I expected. In the old fiscal mandate, they talked about having a target to balance the current budget in 15-16 and a target to have the national debt falling. Now, you can see why this Chancellor has got a little bit worried about setting targets, Madam Deputy Speaker, because they've not gone very well. It turns out, in this new document, it's been downgraded from a target to an aim. It's the aim. It's not a target, it's an aim. I'm not sure. Why did the words change? Would the Honourable Gentleman like to explain? And then, it turned out, in a second, as we established a moment ago, even though the vote, according to the Chancellor and the Prime Minister, is on balancing the current budget in 2017-18. In fact, when you read this charter, there is no mention anywhere of the dates 2017-18. The reason why it's baffling is because it's not in there. It's not in there. And instead, as I said a moment ago, let me read it. It's a forward-looking aim to achieve cyclically adjusted current balance by the end of the third year of the rolling five-year forecast period. What on earth does that mean? I'll explain what's going on here. It's not. It's a three-year rolling target. So in 2015, the Deputy Chief Whip or whatever he's doing, I will explain it to him. In 2015, the three-year target presumably means 2017-18. But in 2016, it's rolled forward to 2019, because that's 3 years on. And in 2017, it rolls on to 2020. And in 2018, it rolls on to 2021. It's a three-year rolling target. So it rolls on. So what that means is the Chancellor could come back to the House in 2020 and say, it's OK, consistent with the Charter, I'm meeting the objective, the aim, because I'm balancing the current budget in 2023. That's what it says. It's utterly ridiculous. It doesn't even sign him and his party up to balancing the current budget by the end of the next Parliament. The fact is, for all the boasts and the rhetoric and the talk of traps, this new charter before the House, it's not targets, it's aims. It's not balancing the overall budget, it's the current budget. It's not an absolute commitment to deliver a surplus in the next Parliament. It's an absolute commitment to a three-year rolling five-year target. He spent all the last 9 months telling everyone what a clever wheeze it is. And once again, it's totally backfired. It's less of a trap and more of a load of complete pony and trap, Madam Deputy Speaker. That's what we have before us today. I will give way to my honourable friend.
Would my honourable friend agree that perhaps one of the problems with a rolling target is it's very difficult to hit? But the point for many of my constituents is this. Low-paid workers in my constituency don't get to pay tax at all. Instead, they need the taxman to be giving them money. Absolutely. And isn't it because of so many people needing in-work benefits, they work and Absolutely. Yet the taxman gives them money, that the Chancellor is now spending £25 billion more than he expected to in 2010?
He is, Madam Deputy Speaker, and as my honourable friend says, he's not only overspent in this Parliament, in the next Parliament he's promising £12 billion of further cuts, but as the Institute for Fiscal Studies made clear in December, his party has been totally unspecific about where any of those cuts are going to fall, beyond the fact they're hitting the tax credits of working people in our country. I'll give way.
Would my honourable friend not agree with me that if the Chancellor wanted to say 2017-18, why didn't he say 2017-18 instead of this convoluted third year of a five-year rolling average? By definition, you never get to it, and that's probably what his policy
really is. He knows it.
It's either a three-year rolling five-year target to avoid ever getting to be judged on it, or it's because he couldn't get his quad partners to agree with it before the autumn statement, Madam Deputy Speaker. We know from the letter from the OBR that the quad signed up to the spending cuts, but maybe the quad didn't quite sign up to the fiscal charge the Chancellor wanted.
Would my right honourable friend accept that perhaps the reason for wording it in this way is that at any given point when the Chancellor is asked the question as to whether he has met the aim, not the target, but the aim, he can say, we are going to meet the aim because this is now the five-year rolling period and we aim to meet it in the third year. Exactly. Yes. But in no specific year will he actually be held to account for whether he has met it.
Exactly. Of course, Madam Deputy Speaker, that is exactly what the Chancellor has done in this Parliament. In his mandate, he said, back in 2010, when he set his first mandate, would be by the end of the rolling five-year forecast period. In 2010, the Prime Minister clearly thought that meant 2015. The Chancellor now thinks it means 2018 or 2019. That's why he still says he's meeting his fiscal target. Everybody else can say it's a completely preposterous claim. I'll give way.
I'm very grateful to the Shadow Chancellor's giving way. He has called this proposal a load of pony and trap, which I think is a metaphor for something else. He has also called it a gimmick. He also knows that many in his own party oppose it. What he has not explained to this House is why he is forcing them to vote for it.
I am the honourable gentleman didn't mention the quote from the Taxpayers Alliance, which also said it was a complete gimmick, which simply exposes the fact that the Chancellor has failed to meet his targets. I will come on to our fiscal position now. I'll give way to the former Chancellor one more time.
Chancellor's very generous. My last intervention, I assure him. I'm afraid I'm not quite following this rambling textual analysis. So if I can take him back to where I thought we were near to agreeing, he agreed that we were right to stick to our spending reductions, and he agrees further fiscal consolidation is required of the kind the Chancellor is describing. His case appears to be that he has some great plans that will increase our underlying growth rate in future on top of those the government already has. Is he going to set out this startling new plan in the course of the remaining time in his speech?
I will, Madam Deputy Speaker. And just to say, for the interest of the former Chancellor, because this wasn't like it in his day or the time when I was at the Treasury, we're now in a position where our trend rate of growth in 2014, 1.17, in the OECD out of 34 countries, that makes us 19th. A lower underlying trend than the following countries: Chile, Israel, Korea, Australia, Mexico, Poland, the list goes on. He's completely right. We've got to find a way which we can strengthen the underlying growth of the economy. Let me come on to Labour's position. We will cut the deficit every year. We'll get the current budget into surplus. We'll get the national debt falling as soon as possible in the next Parliament, fully consistent with this fiscal charter. How fast we can do so will depend what happens to growth, to wages, the housing benefit bill, and events around the world. But our approach will be different from the Conservatives. Our approach will be different from the Conservatives on the following front. Because we believe, unlike the one club Chancellor, there's three different things which need to be done to properly and fairly balance the books in the next Parliament. First of all, as we've said, because we will cut the deficit every year, there will be sensible spending cuts in non-protected areas. We'll cut the winter allowance, take it away from the richest 5% of pensioners. We'll cap child benefit at 1% for 2 years. Our zero-based review is examining every pound the government spends to find savings. Secondly, we will make different and fairer choices, including reversing this government's £3 billion a year top great tax cut for people earning over £150,000. And third, our plan will deliver the rising living standards and stronger... No.
Third, our plan will deliver the rising living standards and stronger growth needed to balance the books. More free childcare paid for by the bank levy, properly capitalising the business investment bank, raising the national minimum wage faster than wages, repeating the bank bonus tax to get young people back to work, devolving full growth and business rates to city and county regions, getting the houses built we need, 200,000 a year more by 2020, all part of a proper long-term plan for growth and jobs. What the OBR figures show, that if our economy was not to slow down next year, the year after, and the year after that, but instead grew by 0.5% faster, that cumulatively would bring in £32 billion in the next Parliament. If we could increase the underlying trend rate of growth in the next Parliament by 0.25%, that would mean £19 billion a year more in tax revenues by the end of the Parliament. It's not only about tax rises and spending cuts, it's also about growth and jobs and the underlying trend. This Chancellor has seen growth downgraded. We've got to do a better job. Unless we do that, we will not see the books balance in the next Parliament. And that is what we mean by an economy which works for working people and a tough, fair and balanced plan to get the deficit down.
Stephen Kane.
Madam Deputy Speaker, for the Shadow Chancellor giving way. Would he say something now? We're only 114 days from the general election. He spent the last 4 years plus criticising and saying what he would object to. Why doesn't he put before the House and before the people of this country his proposals for increasing taxes, which he has said he will do, where those are going to come from for the hard-working people of my constituency and other constituencies in this country?
It's always dangerous when you're preparing an intervention not to listen to the speech, because I just did exactly that, Madam Deputy Speaker. The interesting thing is, why is it we're going to put the top rate of tax back to 50% for people earning over £150,000. And if he wanted to win his seat, he'd support it, Madam Deputy Speaker. Let us... instead, this Chancellor is taking an increasingly unbalanced and extreme approach. Look what he's failed to put in the Charter. He's not put asking those with broader shoulders to make a greater contribution, as I just said. He's not said we need to strengthen the underlying growth of our economy and improve living standards. And instead, he's made up for all that loss of tax revenue by imposing even bigger spending cuts in the autumn statement than he was planning before. Let me just tell the House the facts. Over 61% of planned departmental spending cuts are still to come in the next Parliament under this Chancellor. Is a further cut for unprotected departments of 26.3% over the next 4 years. The cuts for unprotected departments are a third bigger in the next 4 years than in the last Parliament. It will be the biggest fall in day-to-day spending on public services in any four-year period since the Second World War. That's the Chancellor's prospectus for his manifesto. It's cuts which the Institute for Fiscal Studies have said are colossal and which the Office of Budget Responsibility say will take spending on public services back to the level of the 1930s as a percentage of GDP. That is the Chancellor's extreme and unbalanced plan, and that is what we are opposing, Madam Deputy Speaker. I'll give way.
If the other side are so dismissive of Labour's plans, why are they scared to let the OBR independently audit our plans instead of using civil servants to fraudulently manufacture fictitious dossiers about Labour's plans?
Order. Order. Mr McCabe, I think that you need to... just to rephrase the presentation by civil servants from fraudulent. I'll deal with it, thank you. I don't need any help.
Withdraw the term fraudulent. I think they are misusing civil servants.
Ed Walls.
Madam Deputy Speaker, let me just say, on the issue of the dossier, which my honourable friend just referred to, this is what the Conservative peer and former head of the Conservative Party's think tank said, Lord Finkelstein. He described the figures in the Chancellor's document as ridiculous. And Mr Dancona, the commentator from the Evening Standard, said, if the Tories are to win, they cannot afford schoolboy errors of the sort that wrecked their dossier this week. I'm not going to say they're fraudulent, but there was a whole series of untruths in that document, which I think the Chancellor should withdraw so we can have a proper debate. But he could go further than that, Madam Deputy Speaker. He could agree to the proposal from this side of the House and the Chair of the Treasury Select Committee and from the Chief Secretary and not have the Chancellor costing opposition policies, or supposedly the Treasury, based on political assumptions from special advisers. Why not ask the Office of Budget Responsibility to do that audit? Why not do so? He could have done that at any time in the last 18 months. Many have called for this to happen. I'll tell you why not. Because he has made £7 billion of unfunded and uncosted commitments to cut taxes, and he can't say where the money is going to come from. And instead, rather than an honest debate, he wants to spread smears about Labour's plans, which he knows would not stand up to independent scrutiny, Madam Deputy Speaker. That is the reason. If not, he could have joined the cross-party consensus and we could have been voting today in this new fiscal charter to allow the OBR to play that role. It's what should have happened. It's what we called for. It's what many others supported last year. And this Chancellor has ducked it because he's not got the courage to have an honest debate. That is the reality. He claims his policy's working. There is nothing competent about borrowing £200 billion more than you planned. Our plan will cut the deficit every year and balance the books. His extreme plan will take public spending back to the level of the 1930s. What this Chancellor should do is stop spending his time playing silly political games, which time after time backfire, as it's backfired on him again today. What he should do is sort out the economy and spend a bit more time making his sums add up.
Order. There will be a 6-minute time limit on all backbench contributions starting from now. It may be necessary to reduce it further, so I ask members to bear that in mind when taking interventions. There's therefore a 6-minute time limit starting now, and the first speaker is Mr. Kenneth Clarke.
Well, Madam Deputy Speaker, I think that last speech clarified that the Chancellor admits that fiscal...